Welcome to the Book Club, the show that spotlights undiscovered authors and their books. Here's your host, John Austin.
Thanks, Lee, and welcome to today's edition of the Book Club. We have a very intriguing show for you today. Two terrific novels from two very different genres. And we start this morning with Stephen Fujita and his classic horror novel, Sword of the Undead. Stephen Fujita incorporates his interest in history, Japanese period drama, episodic samurai drama, and the supernatural in his work. He attended college in Washington, D.C., and he currently lives in Southern California. Welcome to the Book Club, Steve.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure being here.
Well, we're really happy to have you here. You know, I was thinking we've had a year, I think, the fourth vampire novel we've had since we've been on air in July, and it's come full circle. We had one that was a detective in New York City, a vampire, and then we had Tamara Montos, very erotic vampire book, and then Candace Bowser had a book that is basically the Bible of the vampires. But now we're full circle, because now we're back to where it actually began, where with a very scary story based on Bram Stoker's Dracula. So if you don't mind, would you begin with a brief synopsis of the book?
Well, yeah, it is and it isn't Bram Stoker's Dracula. The basic plot and the supporting characters are similar, but other than that, it's completely independent. In mine, the story takes place in 1872, and we've got Jonathan Harker, who's an attorney, traveling to Japan to close a real estate deal with a lord named Kageura. So he goes over to Japan, and while there, he meets up with a Texas cattle rancher named Quincy Morris, who in turn will meet a samurai named Yagi Jube, and those two will come into play when the story shifts to the United States. Well, then Harker is going to make it to the castle, and what happens is he gets imprisoned by the Lord Kageura, and the samurai lord leaves him for dead and moves to the United States. So then the story shifts to the United States, and we learn that Harker's friend Lucy has been bitten by a vampire, and that brings Van Helsing, Dr. Seward, Renfield into the picture. Van Helsing and Seward end up destroying Lucy, and when that happens, Harker manages to make it back to the United States, and he finds that his wife Mina is now the new target of the vampire. So then,
let's stop there, because I think I don't want to get too far into it, because I'm going to ask you about a lot of these characters. But you know, this is a very clever idea, I thought, putting these things together. Because, and you've done you really pulled this one off. But I wanted to talk about some of the characters that you've been talking about, and then maybe we can go back but let's talk first about Jonathan Harker, who is his basically the main character at the beginning of the book.
Okay, yeah, he's an attorney. He's pretty much the character that gets everything set into motion. He's he goes to Japan to close a deal for some land in California that Lord Kageura has purchased, and he ends up going over there. And under the pretense of wanting to learn more about the United States, he imprisons Harker. And Harker realizes he's trapped over there, and he has to try and manage how to get out of the castle to make it back to the United States.
Okay, and as he is traveling through Japan, there's a couple of things. One is I wanted to talk about Quincy Morris too, who is the other. You mentioned him as you were talking, but he's the other fellow, the other American in Japan, and he's the big Texan. You want to just give us briefly what he is, and then I want to talk about the attack on the road.
Okay, Quincy Morris is a cattle rancher. He's trying to find new markets for his beef, and right around that time, trading begins between Japan and the United States, so he decides Japan would be a good market, and he goes over there and just happens to run into Jonathan Harker, a fellow American.
Okay. You know, there's a lot of Japanese history in here, and I thought the beef thing and where they go to Kobe, I thought was interesting, since Kobe beef is now the big thing here. Okay, then, and now I don't remember, I think it's Harker is on the road, and he's attacked by the shinobi. Who is, am I pronouncing that correct?
Shinobi.
Shinobi, okay. Who are they?
It's actually, actually Quincy Morris is the one that's attacked.
Okay.
The Shinobi. Shinobi traditionally are the spies and assassins that were employed by the government whenever they wanted to get rid of someone. They're more commonly known as ninja in the United States.
Oh, okay. All right. And, okay, so now, that's right, Quincy Morris was attacked, and he is then saved by the samurai Yagyu Jubei.
Jubei.
Right. Okay. And tell us about him. And you don't have to, we'll talk more about him as when he reappears in the novel in the United States, but at least you can kind of fill us in at the beginning.
Well, he was actually a real-life person in historical Japan. But in my story, he can't die. He kind of gets all the good parts of being a vampire without the bad parts. He doesn't have to exist on blood. He needs to be destroyed. He can't die naturally, and it's basically his mission to destroy demons and ogres and the supernatural evil beings.
Okay, and then again, we mentioned, and I'm going to probably mispronounce this one too, but Kagura, is that the close?
Yeah, Kagura.
Kagura.
He's my Count Dracula, let's say.
Right.
He's a lord in Japan that had lived 300 years prior to when my story takes place, and he was trying to figure out a way to overthrow the government, and he comes across a Western vampire who turns him into a vampire, and that's how he became a vampire. But during his natural life, he had gotten himself exiled to this island called Onigashima, just the island of demons, and he's just been there waiting for his chance to leave for like 200 years.
Okay, and he has two castles. He has one in Onigashima.
Yeah.
Right, and then one in Los Angeles. But was there, and I asked you this, I know when before we came on the air, but this island, there was such a place in mythology, in the Japanese mythology, or?
Yeah, it's an island that pops up in a Japanese folktale called Momotaro, who also makes an appearance in the novel. It's an island, I don't think it's really an actual island, but it's in a group of islands off the coast of Japan that the people around there sort of named it based on this folktale that's been around.
Okay, and it supposedly harbors demons, and in this book it does. This book actually is very scary, I think, which is I'm sure what you were after. And Harker is imprisoned then in Kagura's castle on this island. And he then has to explain how come there are no windows in the castle.
Oh yeah, that's really so the sun, the interior doesn't get any sunlight.
Okay, and so because he's a vampire, and then there's Kagura tells Harker that he's free to roam the castle, well, not to go outside, but not to go into the locked rooms. But he does. He goes into two of them, and the first one he goes into, there are wolves.
The wolf is he's trying to get outside the castle, and the wolves appear.
Okay, all right.
And then he has to withdraw back into the castle.
Okay, and then he hits the ones that I thought were really scary, and those were the three eerie women that were thrown. Well, go ahead, tell us about the three women.
The three eerie women. This one, I can't remember from the book if it was in the original novel. It gets played a lot in various adaptations. I think it was part of the original novel. But growing up, I just remember Dracula having three wives. And what I did in this novel, knowing Japanese history, is that lords were allowed to keep concubines. So I just turned the wives into concubines. And they're vampires also, but they seem to be imprisoned by Kagura. They can't leave on their own. They just seem to have to roam inside the castle and wait for victims to be brought to them.
Right, and when Harker walks in there, they think they found their meal for that evening. And this part was, I thought, was again very, very scary. Gogira comes in and gives him a child to eat or to have their blood, and gets Harker out of the room. Okay, so there's another part in here that I thought was very interesting, because Harker thinks that he is speaking English and that Kagura is understanding him in English, and as it turns out, he's actually speaking Japanese and hearing Japanese and understanding it.
Yeah, actually, that one I had to put in there because if you ever watch the science fiction movies, when the aliens come to Earth, it's sort of a given that the aliens come to Earth and they speak English. And we speak back to them in English, and we understand each other. And one thing about those movies is I think, how are they doing that? They're speaking English, but in real life, if aliens did come here, we wouldn't be speaking English. So I had to come up with some way to explain how the two are communicating. And actually, originally, I just had Kagura saying, I can't explain to you now what's happening. I'll explain to you later. But my editor, Greg Oreo, he said, you know, Steve, that's a little bit too thin. You got to give them some explanation. And he says, why not have them telepathically communicating?
Well, I thought it was great. Thought it was very, very well done. Okay, and then as you mentioned earlier, R.M. Renfield and Dr. John Seward enter the book.
Yeah, Renfield, as it turns out, is a department store owner in San Francisco. He had been to Japan to pick up some items to import to the United States, and he unfortunately ends up on the same boat coming back to the United States as Kagura was on, and he's the only survivor of the ship, and they find him on the beach running, and he's kind of loony when they find him, so they stick him into Dr. Seward's sanatorium, and Dr. Seward's treating him. And around that time, Harker's friend Lucy has been bitten, and Seward is asked to treat her also.
Okay. And Renfield was eating bugs and asking, or at least talking to the air, saying, please, Master, don't forsake him. But, okay, and then I want to mention, before we get into Lucy, I want to mention Arthur Holmwood, and who he is, and then we'll talk about, let's talk about him first.
Arthur Holmwood is Lucy's fiancé. He's sort of about the closest thing to an aristocrat that Los Angeles would have at that time. And he's Lucy's fiancé, so and he's also Harker's and Mina's friend and Dr. Seward's friend. And he has to deal with the emotional aspects of having his fiancé turn into a vampire.
Okay, and then now let's talk about Lucy. And Lucy Westerna, and she starts off, well, first of all, she's sick. She looks terrible, and her color has changed, and she's having these strange dreams.
Yeah, she's Mina's friend, and turns out to be Kagura's first victim in the United States. So we just see her, and when we first come across her, she's already been bitten, and Dr. Seward tries to, with the help of Van Helsing, tries to save her, and they have their ups and downs, and finally they lose the battle. She dies and turns into a vampire.
Right, okay. And, you know, the one part, Renfield, and when he was in the straitjacket and then the bat appeared, I seem to remember something like that in one of those early Dracula movies. Is that right, or did you just come up with that?
No, in my subconscious, I did probably see something like that in some vampire movie. I don't know if it would have been Dracula or some other one.
Okay. Yeah, it's actually, I mean, it's a great story. I'm telling you, this, if as I say, this comes full circle, because this goes back, a novel takes you back to what the original Dracula was meant to do, which is scare the pants off you. So anyway, okay, then we have the garlic and the crucifix first of all, we have to enter, now we bring in Abraham Van Helsing, who was in the Bram Stoker book, and he says, okay, well, let's get the garlic and the crucifix. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, Van Helsing is, he's the expert, let's say, on vampires. He's pretty much the same character he is in a lot of variations of the vampire story, the expert that knows how to destroy the vampire. And so what happens is he learns about Lucy, and he takes charge of the matter, and he's the one that's going to lead the charge, let's say. And what's interesting is about Van Helsing is, if you read the novel, you're going to notice that he's really excited about coming across a vampire. And normally you wouldn't think that someone would be excited to take on a monster, but he seems really excited to be come across this thing that I suppose he's going to want to write about in some scientific journal later on.
Okay.
And then when the story comes way back to the United States, then he'll have sort of a co-leader in Yagyujube.
Oh, okay. Well, we're going to tell you. We'll talk about that actually towards the end. Now Van Helsing thinks he knows how to kill a vampire, and you might want to tell us about that. As it turns out, that doesn't work with this vampire.
No, Van Helsing knows how to kill a European vampire, but what happened was when the Western vampire was introduced into Japan, some modifications were made, and although it's similar to the way you would destroy a European vampire, the Japanese vampire took on some qualities that make it so that you have to destroy it a little bit differently.
Okay, yeah, and we won't touch that because that comes towards the end of the book, and I think... Okay, so and then you mentioned Lucy dies and Renfield dies, and then there's the sighting of the Bloofer lady, and children are disappearing from the neighborhood at night.
Yeah, that one I just want to pay homage to the original novel. Bloofer lady is in Victorian English meant pretty lady, and it's used throughout the original novel, and I just plugged that into mine.
Okay. Well, it was good. I mean, I think that the novel does what it's supposed to do, and that is to scare you. So now they know that that Lucy is actually, in fact, they see Lucy walking around, and she's got a child that she's going to drain the blood from, and they get the child away from her. But then Van Helsing tells Homewood that he must be the one to kill Lucy. Is that right? Because okay.
That's correct.
Okay. And the reason for that is that there's something about if the closest one to them is better able to do it or something. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Okay. The one who has the closest emotional bond is the one that should kill the vampire, even though he says it's not required, but it's most effective if the closest one is the one that actually does the destroying.
Okay. There's a great one, a great line that in here when Quincy actually shows up at Harker's house. Now he's been out of the novel since Harker arrived back in the United States, but now he shows up at Harker's house, and there's a story of the man with the talking dog, the chatty monkey, and the speaking pheasant. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, that's the folktale of Momotaro. In the folktale, Momotaro goes to Onigashima to destroy the demon king of that island, and he's accompanied by the talking dog, the talking monkey, and the talking pheasant. So I just had to stick him into the story, in this story.
It was terrific. Yeah, I like that a lot. I think that's a good thing in this book. Okay, now we're going to introduce, and incidentally, we're talking to Steve Fujita about his classic horror novel, The Sword of the Undead. Harker's wife, Mina, is not feeling well, but they can't, and it looks like she may be going through the same thing that Lucy was, but they can't find any teeth marks.
Yeah, she's sleepwalking, and doctors Seward and Van Helsing, they don't know what's wrong with her, and they can't find any teeth marks. So it's sort of a mystery to them on on what's happening to her.
Okay, and now we know the Kagura, incidentally, is now he's in the castle in Los Angeles, and Quincy is sure that he can go kill him because he's got his guns and his men, and so they storm the castle. We probably don't want to tell what happens, but they go in there to get rid of him. And then there is around that time we have the arrival of the other samurai who we met earlier in Japan, and this is Jubei. And do you want to tell Jubei's story? Not the whole part, but just, you know, kind of who he is.
Jubei is in this novel. He's an acquaintance of Quincy Morris, and he's over in the United States to study Native Americans and Indians. And while he's over here, he knows that Quincy Morris is over here. So he decides to pay Quincy Morris a visit and ends up at the Harker household. And he gets reunited with his old enemy, Kagura.
Okay, and he's a Texan with a posse, and he figures he can do this guy in. I think we ought to stop here because I definitely don't want to go into the end of this novel, because this thing is, the ending is very different, very, very different from what you expect. And it's very exciting. From here on, it gets just really good. And it looks to me like it's also set up for a sequel. But Steve, I want to talk about you for a little bit, but tell the folks how they buy the book.
They could go into Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com, BooksAMillion.com, and type in the title of the book, Sword of the Undead, and it should pop up on top of the search results.
Okay, and they can also find it under your name, Stephen Fujita, Fujita. Okay, tell me something here. I want to spend a few minutes talking to you because I am so impressed with how you came up with this idea. What struck you? I mean, where did this idea come from?
Well, it's a blending of my interests. I grew up watching the Universal horror pictures of the 1930s and the Hammer picture horror with Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee made in the 50s. And then growing up in Los Angeles, I had a lot of exposure to Japanese samurai drama, which I also enjoy. And then I also have a interest in history. And I just sort of, it just came to me to blend all three together and incorporate all that into one story.
Okay, and you must have done quite a lot of research, because you do have a lot of, as I mentioned before, there is a lot of Japanese history in there, and there's a lot of, I guess, the folklore history. So you must have had, unless you grew up with that, but I would guess you would have had to research that.
I did. I did. Google became my best friend during this time.
Okay. Now, I when the book ended, the first thing I thought was there's going to be a sequel. And is there?
Yeah, there is a sequel. It's not quite what you expect with the ending I had in the book. The sequel is going to take place in modern day Los Angeles, and it'll be more of a one-on-one battle between Yagi Jubei and the vampire.
Okay. I have two other questions before, because we're running out of time, but when did you, you're a very young man still, and when did you start writing?
Probably when I was about 9 or 10 years old.
Oh, my.
My aunt gave me a typewriter, a manual typewriter that she was no longer using. And between that and seeing the movie Jaws, I think it inspired my desire to write stories.
Okay. And how long did it take you to do this novel?
This one, the writing took about 6 to 8 months from cementing the idea and then doing the research and then the actual writing.
All right. And the sequel, when will that be out?
Hopefully that'll be out in the fall of 2011.
Okay. So we're about a year away from that. And do you have a website, Steve? I should know this, but I don't.
Yes, I do.
Okay, give us the website. I think that's important. I think people love to go to the websites.
Okay, it's www.stephenfujitaauthor.com.
Okay, give it to us again.
Okay, www.stephenfujitaauthor.com. stephenwithav.com.
Okay.
Stephen with a V.
Stephen with a V. Very good. Okay. We've been talking to Steve Fujita about his novel, Sword of the Undead. Now stay tuned for the second half of our program right after these messages.